Because if there were never any problems, you wouldn't have a job. A computer would be doing your job, or it would just be a matter of punching it in, and that would be the end of it. So problems are the only way we get to differentiate ourselves from the other people that are doing the same thing that we're doing. So I look at the same thing when it comes to running. You know, I want it, honestly, when a 100-miler, I want it to be 110 degrees, or I want it to be raining or snowing and muddy. Like, I want the conditions to be as bad as they can possibly be, because in my mind, I'm going to do better. The harder it is, I'm going to do better. Okay. So I think the point of all that ramble there is this one simple thing. Focusing on, yeah, visualize yourself getting to the finish line, so to speak. But don't ever forget that all that matters is the next incremental step that you have to take, because that step will lead you to the next one. And no matter what problems you're anticipating, like, you may know there's a problem with a closing or with an appraisal or whatever there might be. You know there's a problem coming. Don't get so fixated on that problem until it's right, until you're upon it. Keep doing the steps that you need to do to get there, and very often the solution will present itself, you know, or one way or the other, you will find a way through your own experience to get past that.
You're listening to the Appraiser Secrets Podcast with your host, Mark Jackson. You will get straightforward advice for how to make a profit on every new transaction that you do, compounding your net worth and growing your wealth substantially all through real estate. Get more information at appraisersecrets.com.
Truly excited to offer up another episode of the Appraiser Secrets Podcast. My name is Mark Jackson. You can call me MJ, and I have an outstanding guest with us today, Charlie Engel, who is an ultra-marathoner, so much so that he's run from the entire West Coast to the East Coast of Africa. Really excited about introducing his book to our group. Charlie, thank you for being today, man. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule.
MJ, it's so much my pleasure to be with you today. So thanks for having me on. I hope I can, I won't let you down today.
I have absolutely no doubt this will go well. For everybody, I'm excited to have Charlie with us, but always remember, this is about taking a valuation-first approach to real estate, knowing that you're going to make a profit when you buy. And all the guests that we have, and even the individual trainings that we do, we always meld that into the concept. And Charlie has a unique walk in life that will give you a sense of what it is, regardless of where your background is, how to be ultimately successful, and maybe not in the arena that you originally thought that you would be. So Charlie, again, thank you for being here. If you would, just take a couple of moments, share a little bit about who you are, where you hail from, and then I've got a few questions I want to ask you. Just to kind of bring out the full content of our time today.
Thanks. I appreciate that, man. Well, so first of all, I'm in North Carolina. I live in Durham, North Carolina, and went to the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And, you know, I've got to just say one thing real quick about my Tar Heels, because, you know, I'm a sports fan. You and I talked, and I was in school with another MJ back when I was in college, you know, so I have to point that out that, strangely, I played JV basketball when I was at Carolina even. So Roy Williams, who's the current Carolina coach, was the JV coach back then.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and so I got the chance to actually hang out and shoot some hoops with the other MJ. Right, exactly. But my parents were super young. You know, I was growing up in North Carolina, and they were students at Chapel Hill, and I ultimately ended up going there. And you and I talked a little bit when we first met about my background, which, as you know, is it's very much steeped in a lot of problems with addiction and, you know, a lot of issues that I dealt with earlier in my life that have really helped to shape, you know, who I've become today. So I'm grateful that I survived those days and excited every day I wake up now with something new to do.
Yeah. Before we get even deeper into the story and some of the background, we talk about this addiction, but it's amazing what addiction can produce. Would you just give a snippet about what are origins and how it came to be.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, and I actually can give my addiction credit for all of this because, you know, I can say today I'm happily clean and sober and have been for 26 years now. So my life has changed for the better in a million ways. But one of the side effects of that is I've taken on some huge projects in my life. And I think the when I first got clean and sober, I assumed that I needed to like kill my addiction. Like I needed to get rid of that guy.
Yeah.
And in fact, the addiction and my those personality traits, and I'm betting a lot of people can relate to this, you know, those actually turned out to be the most important traits for me. Those same addictive qualities make me good at things. So as long as I'm using my power and my energy focused on good things,
yes,
then it's going to work out. So water.org is a great example. So you referenced me doing this run across Africa. So I ran all the way across the Sahara Desert, almost 5,000 miles about 10 years ago. And when I did that, Matt Damon was actually my partner in that project. And Matt and I co-created something called H2O Africa. And I raised about $6 million
just for a little bit more on Matt Damon, just somebody doesn't know who he is.
If there's somebody listening to this that doesn't know who Matt Damon is, I'm not sure I can help, to be honest with you. But you know, he's a big movie star, but he's, you know, all the Bourne movies. I think his first Academy Award was for Good Will Hunting, which is that sort of dates me that I remember that movie really well. But so, you know, Matt and I created this nonprofit as part of my run across the Sahara and with the idea that maybe we'd get a chance to help a few people. And in almost no time, we raised about $6 million, realized that we had already outgrown our ability to manage that. And so we partnered with another really amazing nonprofit, and together we created water.org. And today, water.org, I mean, we just passed $1 billion in funding last year.
Wow.
And we are far and away the largest and most, I think, prolific clean water nonprofit in the world. So we bring clean water infrastructure, not just digging wells, but micro loans and a lot of ways that we allow people to take charge of their own lives, very much like what you try to do here, you know, giving people the tools that they need so that they can take the next step to be successful. And for some people, that success means just being able to send their kids to a school or being able to have sanitation and a clean drink of water.
Yeah.
So I'm very proud of what we accomplished together there.
So, I mean, it's really neat because this concept, I mean, you talked about the run was 10 years ago, but that was still some 13 or so odd years after you came out of addiction. So if you would, just kind of talk a little bit about, you know, the stop, the moment where, okay, I had to make a transition, what replaced it, and then what is it, how do you relate your life in this running to addiction, if you don't mind? I realize that's probably three questions, but.
Yeah, it's a great question though, and it's when I look back, you know, I spent my 20s basically being, and people assume an addict looks a certain way.
Yeah,
I was a very successful guy, even though I was directionless in many ways. I was the top salesman in the country for Toyota for a couple of years. I sold over 600 cars a year. I was doing these high achieving things in order to balance out this other part of my life where I was a really, you know, hardcore drug addict. And I tried to quit, you know, Mark, it was a terrible life. You know, it wasn't good for me or my family. And I tried to quit 100 times. And it wasn't until the birth of my first son. And I really made a decision, okay, for him, I'm going to stop. Mm-hmm. And about 2 months after his birth, there I found myself again on another 6-day binge, and people were shooting at me and the police were involved, and it was just this terrible situation. And it was at the end of that crazy 6 days with no sleep and all the nonsense that goes along with that lifestyle that I realized the clearest idea I've had in my whole life. Nobody is coming to save me. My son can't save me.
Right.
Nobody else can save me. There's only one person on this planet that can save me, and that's me. And I have to first make that decision that I'm worthy of being saved and that I want to change my life. And that night, I committed to going to meetings, to recovery meetings. I went to AA, and for 3 years, I went to a meeting every single day. And I ran every single day. I put on my shoes and I ran. And I made a commitment to do that for the first 3 years without missing a single day of either of those two things. And by making that the platform of my life began to change.
There you go. So when you think about this relationship between running and addiction, how do you put those two together?
Yeah, and so, you know, look, people asked me in those first 3 years, because I ran 30 marathons in the first 3 years. And so I had people who absolutely said, hey, you know, you think maybe you just switched addictions. And I realized it was a valid question. But pretty quickly I understood that addiction was about hiding. You know, addiction is all about being invisible and not feeling anything. And running, especially long distance running, is about feeling everything. Like you're fully present all the time. So interestingly, the relationship as an addict is what drove me to continue to seek answers. And here is, I think, the best line I can draw between the two things. And I guarantee that your viewers will agree with this. The best lessons that we all learn, right? Do they come from the easy things we faced or from the hard things that we faced in our lives? And I don't think there's any question that it's the hard things, whether it's things that we've self-inflicted wounds, as I call them, or whether it's things that were thrust upon us or some combination. It's those things that shape who we are. So I realized as an addict that I didn't need to get rid of all those qualities. I just had to figure out how to direct them to something good. And for me, running became that thing. Running saved my life, and then it actually gave me a life because I decided I was going to take it to the next level.
There you go. So here's the thing, and you shared a little snippet of this. I'm going to segue away from just a little bit of our conversation, but you know, frame up a question. There's the dynamic that all of us in our lives have some form of addiction. It's just considered if it's more normative or not, but it exists. Share a little bit about how you've seen, you know, other forms of addictions in people that just wouldn't be considered, you know, alcoholism, whatever the case may be.
Sure.
And how you've seen them be able to redirect that effort. Because, you know, it's all we're talking about is addiction. The idea is that there's so many different frameworks and so many different kinds, but that they can refocus to success. So just things that you've seen that people have been able to take and use to reframe their lives.
Yeah, and I think, man, that's such a deep and really important question, what you just said, because, you know, what is the definition of the success justify behavior is kind of the question, because even a lot of the very successful people like yourself and others listening to this, if you've been successful, you may not be what you'd call an addict, but there is an obsession that has to be present for you to achieve some level of success. Nobody sits on the sofa for 4 hours a day and all of a sudden has a bank account full of money, or at least nobody that I know. And so, you know, you have to apply yourself, and only you, if you're paying attention, can decide whether or not your behavior justifies the ends. You know, do the means justify the ends? Because even as a person, mine were overt, right? It didn't take a genius to see that I was doing a lot of drugs and it was causing a lot of problems. Like, that was a really obvious issue. But what about the guy or the woman who works 80 hours a week, doesn't spend any time with her family, doesn't, like, whatever, all the other things that, in my view, that's also a form of unhealthy obsession, because no amount of money is actually going to make you, it's not going to fulfill that hole that you're trying to fill. So I think the point to your question is that everybody has to look for a certain amount of balance mm-hmm. in what they do, while acknowledging the fact that if you want to be successful in your business, in your family, or in athletics, there has to be an obsessive quality to it. You know, the other kinds of addicts that I know are you know, food addicts or people who, again, it's difficult to put your finger on, but, you know, a person who sits on the sofa and watches 8 hours of television every day and is, you know, super overweight, you know, that's all about addiction right there. It just doesn't fit the mold of what we see in our mind.
Yeah.
So, you know, so we've got to use our best qualities to focus on the things that will get us where we want to go.
You know, it's really unique because for everybody that's listening, when we talk about this idea of success or whatever measure of success we have, because it comes in so many different forms, whether it's in parenthood and seeing your child successfully get off to college, if it is this dynamic that you've had some success in your spirit walk and you have a strong connection in your faith. I mean, that takes a definitive exercise on a repeated basis to get to that yeah. level of self-actualization or whatever the case may be. And overwhelmingly, it's a good thing. But at some point when you're 29 years old and, you know, your child is 2 months old, or, you know, you're, you know, 30 years old and your company's been on a strike and you're being forced out to the dock to go work out of your comfortable little air-conditioned office, there's a point where whatever you've done previously on a repetitive basis has gotten you to the point where you're frustrated, sick and tired of being sick and tired of being yeah. sick and tired of being sick and tired, okay?
Yeah.
You revert or redirect that energy to those things that you identify outside of yourself or even within yourself that you want to be a change. And the only way to do it is get to whatever that seminal moment is for you. So let me ask this question, because you've had this wonderful transition in life and move forward. But when you think about your life, what role do having kids play in your choices and your adventures, these things you do, have meaning for you now?
Man, the you know, kids changed everything, and I think most parents would say that. But for me, I'm a proponent of maybe something that a lot of people aren't, and that is to make sure that even as a parent that you are living your own dream and that you're not, you know, turning all that over and putting all that pressure onto your kids. You know, some people will abandon their own life in a way because they genuinely want to provide their children with an easier life. And I always say, you know, as I said a little while ago, what do we learn from easy? And so I think, again, it's one of those things where with me, I can say absolutely that, you know, I have continued to chase these, especially physical dreams. Even writing a book was a dream for me, and I got that done. And I wanted my kids to not just see me as their dad. I wanted them to see me as a person that was continuing to try to make a difference in the world, and not just in their world, but in the world. And they're now both in their 20s, and I'm happy to say that one is, you know, started a nonprofit. The other one is, you know, clean and sober and on his own path. And it's been fascinating to me to watch them grow as independent people. And I know that just like my mother gave to me, I gave them the gift of thinking for themselves and of pursuing their own dreams and not looking at me as like I'm their dad. And yeah, I'm a provider. But it's not my job to give up everything that I want to do just to make their lives better. It's got to be a balance.
There you go. So one of the things that you heard me say when we opened up today, everything we do at Appraiser Secrets, powered by Investor Comps, utilizing real estate valuation training and data in particular to bring forth success, knowing that you're going to make a profit on every transaction you do. I mean, we've had a chance to have a couple of conversations. You work in a variety of different environments with Spartan, as well as the other business leaders you come in touch with. What I would ask is for the audience today, when they're thinking about this idea of, and again, I just use a phrasing, addiction or you know, maybe reframed passion. How would you share with them, based on your walk, your experiences in the professional environment you go in, to say, look, you need to really listen and take advantage of the information in front of you so that you can be successful in real estate. And valuation is the way to accomplish that.
Yeah.
I need
to
get some more. These braces continually get in the way, I swear. I feel like a recycled teenager with these things on. But I think I said we have to open my mouth wider to say all the words I want to say.
Makes you articulate better, though. So it's good. It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you would just want to share, based on your point of view and how you would relate to them, to really drive forward a valuation-first approach to be successful.
Man, it's such a great question. I see it two ways. Number one, you know, I think most of your listeners would agree that, you know, there is no such thing as an easy deal. Like, every single deal you get into, a problem comes up, right? I mean, and the ones that you think are going to be the easiest very often end up being the hardest for whatever reason. But experience tells you, just like it tells me, if I'm running 100 miles, I know going into running 100 miles that at some point, probably at multiple points along that path, I'm going to want to quit, or I'm going to be faced with a challenge that's going to make me question my sanity, my reason for existing. Like, you know, it's going to be something that's going to make me want to throw in the towel. But experience tells me that if I just keep moving forward, if I just focus on the next step instead of the last step, and I think that the same holds true for your business and the people that go out to, is, you know problems are going. First of all, you should welcome problems. And I say that with a very straight face, because if there were never any problems, you wouldn't have a job. A computer would be doing your job, or it would just be a matter of punching it in and that would be the end of it. So problems are the only way we get to differentiate ourselves from the other people that are doing the same thing that we're doing. So I look at the same thing when it comes to running. You know, I want it, honestly, when 100 miler, I want it to be 110 degrees, or I want it to be raining or snowing and muddy. Like, I want the conditions to be as bad as they can possibly be, because in my mind, I'm going to do better. The harder it is, I'm going to do better. Okay. So I think the point of all that ramble there is this one simple thing. Focusing on, visualize yourself getting to the finish line, so to speak. But don't ever forget that all that matters is the next incremental step that you have to take, because that step will lead you to the next one. And no matter what problems you're anticipating, like, you may know there's a problem with a closing or with an appraisal or whatever there might be. You know there's a problem coming. Don't get so fixated on that problem until it's right, until you're upon it. Keep doing the steps that you need to do to get there, and very often the solution will present itself, you know, or one way or the other, you will find a way through your own experience to get past that.
There you go. I love how you put that, the two phrases. One in particular is, there's no easy deal, and this idea that you should welcome problems. I tell everybody that I engage with that real estate is not for the faint of heart. It is challenging. It's the obstacles you have to overcome. And just that idea, if you don't mind, I'm probably going to use that. There's no easy deal. So I'm claiming that already. Thank you very much.
You got it.
But it really does allow folks to see that, yes, there's a goal I want to get to, but anticipate that I'm going to have to be prepared for the rain, for the high temperature, for something that's going to happen in a transaction. Expect the best, but be prepared that it's not going to always be an easy deal. So that way, when the easy ones come, you know, we have a party, but we're not caught off guard. We don't stumble and not get back up when challenges do come their way. So not a challenge there. The other thing that I think that you really frame up in here is that as you're looking at your visual and you've got your picture framed up, it's not just about the race that you're doing. It's not just about the deal that you're doing. It's just not about the teaching lesson that you're about to share. It's the next one that comes after that. There's a vision for what comes next, not just what you're presently into. Because, like I say, if there wasn't a problem, like I say, on software, there wouldn't be a job for someone to do to program just as one. Yeah. I'll just use your framing. So great share. So let me ask this question, just in terms of next projects, what's on your horizon that you're already looking forward to?
Man, so it's a big one, Mark. It's a big one. I'm super excited. It is a project that I call 5.8, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But I'm basically going to go from, and I think what I'm getting ready to describe to you is a metaphor for everybody's life. We all go through these low places, you know, in our lives, and we're always reaching for the high points, you know. And for the most part, I think we all agree, the high points don't last, and neither do the low points. You know, you have both of those. Don't ever make big decisions when you're mired in a terrible place or when you're at the top of the mountain, because those two things are going to end, and you're going to spend most of your time in the middle. So what that has to do with my project is this. I'm going to go from the shore of the Dead Sea, which is the lowest land elevation on the planet, and I'm going to actually swim out into the Dead Sea and do a free dive, which allows me to go a little bit lower than the lowest place, because I want to get to the lowest depth I can get to. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to come back to shore, and I'm going to run all the way across the Arabian Desert, and that's about 2,000 miles. And I'm going to get into a kayak, and I'm going to paddle 1,000 miles across the Indian Ocean, across actually some of the roughest water on the planet, and there's pirates and all kinds of craziness. I'm going to land in Mumbai, India, and I'm going to cross India on a mountain bike to the base of Mount Everest, and then I'm going to climb to the top of Everest. And so I'm going to carry a little flask of water from the Dead Sea all the way to the top of Everest, and I'm going to pour it out on top. Wow. And the point of that is to, like, symbolically join, you know, the two ends of the earth. Yeah. And it's this idea that we all go through this never-ending cycle of highs and lows.
Yeah.
And so this puts a little meat on the bone. So it's called 5.8 because while it's about 4,500 miles from the lowest to the highest, it's actually only about 5.8 vertical miles from the lowest place to the highest point. And you and me, you know, you're in Denver now, I'm in North Carolina, and everybody watching this, you know, we all live in this tiny little 5.8 mile sliver of space that surrounds the planet. So we're all in this together already. Whatever, you know, whatever your politics or your religion or anything else, you know, we live here together, and we've got to continue to find ways to take on the challenges that we all face together. And so I'm very excited about, I've got an amazing filmmaker involved. As you know, as I told you, the first project, though, this is a series of expeditions. So coming up, the Dead Sea to Everest will be next year. Yeah. The first project coming up is to actually go the lowest place in Africa to the highest. So that's over on the coast of Africa in Djibouti, all the way across Ethiopia, Kenya, and to the top of Kilimanjaro. And on that one, I'm taking you with me. So,
not a challenge, man. I know I'm going to find out more about that.
You are. No, in seriousness, though, it's a first time ever. I've had 20 years of people asking me if they could come along on parts of my journey or something like that. And it's just not ever really been realistic. But on this one, we're actually going to take, I have a teammate on this project, Andre, who you met. Yes. And, you know, we are actually going to take about 20 people to the top of Kilimanjaro. So it'll just be the Kilimanjaro climb part. So those people who, you know, if you put my website out there, which is just charlieengel.com, those people can find more information there, or if there's someone in particular that wants information, just, you know, reach out to you or reach out to me. But I'd love to see, man. I'd love to see you on that mountain with me.
I know that's right. I know that'd be amazing. Charlie, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here. The way that you frame up ideas obviously engages any audience, but I'm so grateful you took time to talk to my folks at Appraiser Secrets through our podcast that faithfully use investor comps to build their real estate investing business. This has been phenomenal. Now, I know they can catch you on your website, obviously Facebook, Instagram, stuff like that as well.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. All under just Charlie Engel, so I'm easy to find.
There we go. And Engel is E-N-G-L-E. Charlie Engel, E-N-G-L-E. Again, perfect. I'm grateful. Can't thank you enough for being here. Everybody, if you've enjoyed this episode, certainly make sure that you click the button, subscribe, give us a like, leave some comments. This is a topic that you want us to cover at Appraiser Secrets. Don't hesitate to leave that. We'll read that, get the information, and get out a podcast that may be just for you. Charlie, again, thank you for being here. Continue. Blessings and joy, and we'll be following you along the way.
My pleasure, Mark. Take care.
All righty.
You've been listening to another episode of the Appraiser Secrets Podcast with Mark Jackson, the place to be to create your freedom lifestyle with more time off, security, and peace of mind. Find out more at appraisersecrets.com.